Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Hello, I'm Helen.
And I'm Stephen.
And this is the New Statesman post-election podcast. Can we have our obligatory moan before we start, which is, how tired are you? How grumpy are you?
How sad are you? I think I'm at that weird stage where one of the systems I've shut down to deal with the fact that I basically had less than 2 hours of sleep after doing the live blog, then sending my morning email, which I don't talk about enough on this podcast. I then had about 2 hours of sleep, and basically the thing I've shut down is my ability to feel.
Your sadness gland is now so offline.
So the interesting thing is, obviously, I really did not think this would happen.
Do you know who did think this would happen?
You?
Yeah, me.
Well,
but let's be fair. The reason that you were led astray is that you looked at the best possible polling information that we had and looked into it. I, on the other hand, followed a scientific process known as 2016 is a garbage fire, and only bad things happened in 2016, and that's why a bad thing is going to happen. So I won't claim any great, like, there was no great polling or, like, data-based insight. I just thought, everything is horrible and on fire. This sounds plausible.
Well, the thing I did is, and I need to revisit them, is I deliberately wrote up yesterday what my prior assumptions were, because obviously that way you can stress test them. And I think where I fell down is I instinctively don't believe there's that much of a read across between the United States and Europe. And so I was very leery of the Brexit comparison, because I feel I've heard so many rubbish British politicians, actually some good British politicians, compare themselves, have all their fans compare them to Obama, Miliband to Obama, Corbyn to Obama, the other Miliband to Obama, Ed Balls to Obama, Yvette Cooper to Hillary Clinton, Tessa Jowell to Hillary Clinton. Then I think I was guilty of a type of snobbery just a type of, which is a way of admitting to a bigotry, but then putting the word type of, which makes it seem less bad, in just a straightforward snobbery. Then I have conditioned myself to, when someone goes, this British thing is like an American thing, and vice versa, to be like, oh, you're an idiot, aren't you? And so I took...
I know what you mean. It's a very lazy kind of route one analysis, where you kind of go, Theresa May is like Angela Merkel. And actually, there's some comparisons that you can make between them, but it's also a bit like, she is a middle-aged woman, and like, that looks similar. So it can be a bit of a sign of a basic. But no, this is why I think I hold this against you and John Ehrlich, because last week I said, actually, I was beginning to think that Clinton was going to win it, purely because I just felt that my gut instinct, re the garbage fire, needed to be overridden by data. But essentially, at this point, we might as well throw out polls. I mean, how many times did I check bloody 538 during that? And I really might as well, like Margaritaville, which I spoke to John Ehrlich about on the podcast last week, I really might as well have beheaded a chicken and let it wander around a grid for a while to come up with my answer.
I disagree, actually.
Go on.
For a couple of reasons. One, And I'm not going to pretend this was far-sighted, because I kind of, when I kept saying, oh, well, he has a path which involves white non-voters turning out in droves, I thought it was plausible, but I didn't think it actually could happen in the same way that I know theoretically I could throw a tennis ball off the wall of this catacomb and bounce it off the table and back, but I also think it's highly unlikely I can make that shot. But there was the evidence in the data that could happen, right?
Well, that's why I suppose that all those polling sites were trying to do us a service to try and make us understand statistics better, right? By trying to introduce us to the concept of margin of error. I mean, I think 538 in the end end up with about a 1 in 3 chance of a Donald Trump victory. Now, if someone said, you know, I'm going to roll this dice and 1 in 3 times you'll get £1,000, you'd think, sounds pretty decent odds, actually. So I suppose we just do have to kind of deal with the fact you can't make absolute predictions. There is always a probability based.
Yeah, I do also think there were elements of 538's model that actually, in terms of what went wrong, I think they got to the right number, but not necessarily in the way I would. But that is a very dull and wonkish chat for another time. I've decided though, it's actually much better to think that the bad thing's not going to happen. I just, like, the level of stress I was under for, like, most of the referendum campaign compared to, like, the blissful state of unawareness. I mean, to us, even at that point when Virginia looked good, I was like, oh, yeah, things are fine, things are going, oh, well, yeah, don't worry about Florida.
So I came in this morning very early to finish off the magazine, and I was the lonely Cassandra in the office going, let's prepare a Trump cover, though, just in case, you know, let's prepare a Trump leader, though, just in case, you know. Well, and actually in this almost superstitious way, I was like, well, obviously, if Clinton wins, you know, I want to write about these themes, but if Trump wins, I want to write about these themes. And I could see that everyone else was looking at me and like, you have gone off the, you know, you've gone demented. But, you know, the trouble is it's a totally hollow vindication, right? I'm sure you felt this over Brexit. Yeah, I thought that people were awful. People are awful. Okay, let's talk about awful, because I can see already that there is the way this is going to be spun is going to be, oh, ye revolt of the left behind against the elite. You know, Hillary represented the establishment and Donald Trump was a plucky outsider, you know, speaking to people in the Rust Belt. And I do think there are some real complications to that. The first of which is there was a brilliant piece by Vox saying, you know, when people tell you why they're voting for things, listen to them. And a lot of people were saying they were worried about it, that white people were worried about the changing demographics of the country. And actually, even if you're economically anxious, you can say that those people were willing to overlook open racism, right? Some of them obviously indulged it, some of them reveled in it. But at the bare minimum, this was people for whom someone saying that Mexicans were rapists or that he'd sexually assaulted women were not deal breakers. And I think that is something that you can criticise even while you acknowledge that there is some economic anxiety behind it.
I mean, I think the thing about the economic anxiety thing is, right, is, like, do you know what's a pretty economically anxious job? I'm not saying you, just, like, yeah. Working in a casino in Nevada, right? But guess what? Most people who work in casinos in Nevada are Latinx, and they queued round the block and voted for the Democrats. You know what's pretty insecure? Being black and living in any urban centre surrounded by police in modern America. And guess what? Those people, despite the fact that the Republicans have gutted voting, so one of
I saw those big pictures of big lines. I mean, you know, the voter suppression. You know, the GOP put out a press release yesterday, kind of like almost it was boasting about how much African American turnout was down. No, I agree with you. I think there's a real problem, and I think we need to separate out. There is a feeling here, and I think it's the same thing with Brexit, where immigration and demographics come into it, of white people who feel that, of course, recent immigrants and minorities should struggle, but my struggle is somehow qualitatively different, right? Because I'm owed this, you know, this is my country, which is, I mean, it's an innately hilarious concept when it comes to America. If it's anyone's country, it's the Native Americans, right? Like, you know, white people tipped up pretty late on that.
But, you know, if you're having a rubbish time, and I think we've actually both said this before, then your sense of your country doing all right and remaining its purity becomes stronger. However,
and the trajectory as well. I think that's the other thing as well. If you can see that there's an immigrant trajectory where people feel that their children are doing better than they are, whereas actually I think there are white voters in places like Kentucky who do not think their children will do better than they are.
Yeah. However, I mean, I guess where I kind of feel like this breaks down is I feel that there's this, the problem with both Brexit and this, is that there is a section of the right which actually is really into the racial resentment than apparently thinks immigration is bad, wants to reduce it, and is happy to take that mandate. There's actually a section of the left which, whether it agrees with that or it just wants the problem to go away because it just wants fewer people in northern constituencies or fewer people in congressional districts in Pennsylvania to complain to them, they want to go, yeah, of course, the migration is a problem. And then there's another group which agrees and that's a problem, doesn't really know what solution there is to it. And so the response is to go, oh, the answer is to be left-wing and populist. Or, oh, the answer is to talk more about England. Or the answer is to be a bit more Blue Labour. Blue Labour, of course, is one of those kind of weird series of impulses in search of a policy platform. Yes, oh, people like living in communities. Okay, brilliant. What is the Blue Labour plan for more people to live in communities? Whatever that rather nebulous phrase means. And I just think, yeah, this is a problem that I didn't really know what the solution, that I thought the solution to in Europe, depressingly enough, was time. Because eventually we would become as diverse in America, and their diversity was inoculating them against this right-wing global headwind. Now, of course, in the popular vote it did, but in the Electoral College it did not. The difficulty is because my answer to that problem was time, and it now turns out that doesn't work, I am fairly lost.
Well, after the nuclear war, we'll all have to band together anyway to pick through the ruins.
It's true. So one of the other reasons why I'm less upset about this than Brexit is, one, I haven't had a run-up, right? I haven't.
Yeah, are you still processing the information? Yeah. Are you still at that stage?
But also, because it's so much worse, right? So, like, worst case, well, so the outside worst case scenario of Brexit is that Britain takes the EU down with it. But, I mean, for that to happen, a lot of other awful things also have to happen. Like, you know, Le Pen winning the French presidential election, which, you know, is an extreme...
Perfectly plausible.
Well, yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, I was saying...
But, okay, well, let's go through the thing, the bad thing, because I think this is the trouble, isn't it? We have to... This has actually been an election in which there's been almost no talk about policy platforms, right? It's all been about how angry Trump voters are, how people don't like Hillary Clinton, how she used a private server for her emails, and actually, you know, healthcare and... tax and stuff like that has just been absolutely kind of nowhere in the discussion. So the problems with the Trump presidency. Okay, let's list them. I agree that we might. So first of all, Merrick Garland's Supreme Court nomination.
Well, that's not happening.
I mean, So ninth Supreme Court justice now becomes a Republican nominee, and therefore a whole slew of things that are waiting to be ruled on since they've had a 4-4 gridlock will now go the way of conservatives.
Yeah, and the likelihood, if you look at the ages of people on the benches, he will get to replace a further two.
I know, I hope Ruth Bader Ginsburg is wrapping up warm this winter.
Yeah. And, you know, the really scary thing about all of this, it turns out, yes, there are even more really scary things about all of this. Presidential democracy is not a particularly great system in terms of checks and balances and not falling prey to autocratic capture. The US actually has had a remarkably long run in terms of avoiding that. If you look at how Trump has staffed his businesses, this is a man who takes revenge on enemies, who humiliates and tries to destroy people who he feels have wronged him, often for trivial or imagined reasons. He is going to staff the government with his relatives, with this one eye for revenge, etc.
Yeah, when they asked him which women he'd put in the cabinet, he kind of basically just came up with Ivanka.
Yeah.
But do you not think that some of that will be solved by literally being the biggest... Like, if he needs constant approval and attention, I don't know. He literally is the big dog now.
No, because it's never enough for people like that. He's got a Senate majority, and in terms of the Senate map in 2018, there is very little chance he will get one. There is gerrymandering and voter suppression in the House to a sort of an epic level way. So you will have a House majority for almost certainly his first 4 years. He wields phenomenal power. I mean, it is an open question whether or not the 2020 presidential election will meet norms for being free.
I was going to say, will happen. And in terms of military, I mean, the classic thing has always been presidents in their first term get tired of not being able to get anything through an oppositional Congress, so they have a war, or they start flexing their muscles abroad. I mean, it's slightly different with him because, I mean, I think his relationship with Russia is a really, and NATO, and how much he contributes to that is a really open question. And actually, whether or not he just ends up being very isolationist. But, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, in terms of his threats to global security, my instinct is that, you know, he will continue his kind of obeisance towards Russia, which avoids the possibility of a direct conclusion. I mean, obviously, that is not great news if you're in the Baltic states.
Or indeed Aleppo.
Or in Aleppo, currently being bombed. But there is another cause of potential global war flaring up in the next 10, 15 years, and it's catastrophic climate change. And Trump's election means that we are not going to have, and obviously the chances of getting one were already fairly slim.
We're not going to have a climate change deal. Well, he said during the election, didn't he? He tweeted that, and then denied during a debate that climate change was a Chinese hoax.
Yeah, I mean,
which just seems like an odd thing for the Chinese, who are building a shit ton of power stations and airports and roads, to be hoaxing about. But
someone who I've come to regard as a friend is a vegetarian for climate change reasons. In terms of the carbon, and they WhatsApped me when the result came in, just being like, "Well, at least I can start eating steak again." Because
there's a steaky drop in the ocean of horror.
Because they were just like, "Yeah, but I mean, the climate change stuff I think is the most catastrophic stuff." Then there's but obviously that's just the climate change apocalyptic level
and the migration caused by climate change, right? But there, you know, but there are bits of I'm going to say like Miami and places like that that are really suffering already through high water levels and stuff like that. I mean, actually, as a domestic problem, in the next 15 years, that's something that America needs to worry about.
Yeah.
I agree, he's worse at home. I think if I were Muslim in America, if I were black in America and living in an inner city, I would have, you know, I mean, the statements he's made about things like police, for example, and about homeland security, you know, I think that's going to be a very unpleasant atmosphere of suspicion.
Yeah, and I mean, the Supreme Court appointments and what he himself has said about abortion in this campaign, obviously in the past he has funded Planned Parenthood, but the reality of a Republican president, a Republican Senate, is then Roe v. Wade the right to an abortion is going to be over? Yeah, the domestic stuff is. Like,
well, they will do presumably what they've already done already, which is just nibble away at it through a million things. So through things like, you know, you have to have an ultrasound, a vaginal ultrasound, before you get to an abortion. So you have to say, we'll try and show you your baby's heartbeat. Pence, or his vice president, ordered women to have funerals for babies that they'd miscarried or aborted. You know, I mean, these are just kind of cruel, punitive measures that are designed to discourage abortions.
Yeah. And, you know, in terms of sort of one of the few rays of light on the night was Nevada. That was kind of the other thing, is that I had foolishly allowed myself to convince myself that I needed to just be very aware of the data in Nevada. And if the data in Nevada was good, everything else would fall. Nevada was my equivalent of the 35% strategy. It was like, oh, look, the Lib Dem vote has collapsed and gone to Labour. But it turned out there was this thing called UKIP and this thing called the SNP, which both took votes for. And it was similar to that in some ways. But one of the reasons why that happened, and actually one of the reasons why Florida was close, is that there was record Latinx turnout. Like, you can't increase your own turnout without increasing the other side's. That remains the case. However, one, of course, he was increasing the turnout of a much larger group. It was fishing in a larger pool. But they will be able to pass laws to mean that probably that is the most Hispanic that the electorate of Nevada is for some time, right? That is the most diverse the electorate of Florida is. You know, they'll make it harder for people to vote, have more restrictions. You know,
it is going to be crazy that we, you know, we've heard so much about Brexit and about how, you know, this is the people speaking against the elites, and you kind of go, I'm just going to remind you that actually, you know, 48% of people didn't vote for it, including people in Northern Ireland, say, you know, which has got low productivity, low wages, you know, who are very much not the elite. And the same thing with, it does look like Clinton's won the popular vote, right? So actually, if you say the people have spoken, well, actually, if you're going to take a straight majority, the people have spoken in the opposite direction.
Yeah, I mean, this is the thing. It's like the people did not want a Republican congressional majority in the House. That's not what they voted for. And they did not vote for Trump. And these were not the priors I was talking up. So this is the thing. It's like, if you were one of the people who was saying... there was a very interesting conversation on PBS, which is where I was watching the end of the world last night. Yeah, if you're one of the people who was saying America is too diverse for this to happen, you were actually right. Except, unfortunately for you, the Electoral College meant that it didn't matter. But, it is even more disingenuous to describe what has happened as the vote of the people than to describe Brexit as the vote of the people, as if there were 16 million people living in kale houses drinking soy lattes.
What a world that would be. Yeah, I know. And the same thing with, if you actually look at the income, you know, the people on very low incomes overwhelmingly voted Clinton, right? So this is actually, we need a kind of better word for that demographic, which is also the Brexit demographic, which is older voters who didn't go to university, who are white, and who are, you know, they have a little bit, but they are still kind of struggling.
It's odd because there are lots of interesting undercurrents. But obviously yesterday there was a mild kind of diversion about the fact that Bill Clinton in a speech said that Jeremy Corbyn had become leader because people wanted the maddest person in the room. He was speaking in the American English sense, so he meant the angriest person, not the craziest person in the room, because they're feeling angry and hard done by, which actually I think in terms of the kind of lukewarm opposition to most things offered by the other three, and kind of also Owen Smith, I can't believe it's not Corbyn routine, I think it's probably a fair summation of what happened. Of course, that is what happened yesterday. People in the Electoral College voted. So there was a group of people, old, uncomfortable with diversity, for whom actually the idea of, we're integrating, we're becoming more diverse, is heard as we're being wiped out, not people are intermingling with us. So that is a grim vista. Shall we have a cheery vent about the world's silliest people?
Yeah, in our safe space of the podcast, can we talk about who's come out of this really badly?
Yeah. I mean, obviously, I have dented my record.
Your Brexit sage record is now not as burnished as it was. You have shown too much faith in the people. But then again, I also wonder, I remember you saying about Brexit that one of the reasons that you saw it happening is because you'd been outside London, and being black, people had, you know, you'd seen that kind of resentment. And actually, had you been on the ground in America, maybe you would have felt that more. Maybe this is the difference, is that you got feedback before that you weren't getting by not being physically there.
Well, yeah, I mean, my instinct is, in terms of the, obviously I will do 5 predictions for 2017.
No, don't. no one wants that. Will they, any of them be good?
No. In terms of those 5, the 2 I got wrong were, I thought Labour would not come third in Scotland. I've been to Scotland, but I don't, you know, visit, I don't know it as well as I would like. And I didn't include Trump, but I'm going to add that on as another, you know, extra. And I didn't have that feedback and that sense of the depth of white racial resentment.
I think I got that a bit from reading J.D. Vance's book, Hillbilly Elegy, and I think where he talks about Ohio and Kentucky, and actually some of that just sense of... and actually Chris Arnad has also been really good on this, that where he described this phenomenon of back row kids. Yeah. And the idea that you just, you know, you want someone who's actually, and you like the fact that Trump stands up to people, because he stands up to people that, you know, are snooty, or, you know, you think that they're, you know, all that, or they've, you know, they're swats or whatever. And he's just he's the slightly brash one, but you can never be the kind of cerebral Obama or the, you know, swatty Clinton, but you could be the guy who flicks 2 fingers to them and that's quite an attractive thing.
Yeah. The other people who've had a bad election are... This isn't actually cheering me up at all.
Bernie Sanders fans who still think that he would have beaten Trump?
I mean, let's get on to them last, because at least that will be depressing but funny to laugh at, right? Is actually the reverse of people. It's people who are adherents of the Third Way or Blairites or Clintonites or centrists, whatever, or left-wing neoliberals, whatever answer you whatever label you feel comfortable with, if you're of that persuasion, or whichever one you think is more of a useful descriptor, who have been saying basically since Tony Blair left the scene in Europe and America and the UK, well, look, we've got an activist problem. We can't get our people through our grassroots. But actually, we don't have an electorate problem. Hillary Clinton did get through the grassroots. She actually did overwhelmingly well among the Democratic Party's grassroots. It turned out, actually, the Third Way did have an electorate problem. It came apart under the same headwinds. Yes, it won the popular vote, but not by enough. And also, you know, you aim to win under the rules of the system. You know when you know what they are when you enter. And you know, obviously, we've said before that there are big problems basically for every flavor of electoral based left wing politics. But it is a kind of nail in the coffin for the idea that, you know, say, if Liz Kendall hadn't got 4.5% of the vote, she'd now be on 45% of the vote in the polls, right? We kind of, that has taken a bit of a pound.
Well, that kind of relates to the people that I kind of want to nominate as my people that I think have come out of this very badly, which is mainstream Republicans, because they rode the tiger of encouraging things like the Tea Party, encouraging this alternate media that is the sort of conservative talk show host that is now websites like Breitbart, this kind of alt-right collection of websites. They were very happy to say that the media was all full of liberal bias, construct a world of kind of conspiracy theories, thinking that it would help them. And then what happened? It turned out that actually Donald Trump was a much better user of that populism than, you know, I'm going to say, you know, Paul Ryan was, or God, the awful one, Ted Cruz. You know, he combined that with a dash of sort of celebrity and a kind of ability to generate publicity. And it just turned out that the tools that they'd built in order to get their platform through actually could be used by anybody. So I think they've come out of it kind of really poorly. I mean, I think that there has been a certain salvaging of reputation of the Bush family, Mitt Romney, John McCain, who all refused to vote.
Well, John McCain did kind of endorse him at first, right?
Yeah, like, after he'd said that he didn't respect him as a war hero because he got caught. I mean, I just feel like,
yeah, this is when
don't forgive that, John McCain. Like, that party loyalty is not worth that.
Well, when people are saying, oh, you know, moderates in the Republican Congress will hold him back, it's like, oh, you have not been paying enough attention to American politics.
Okay, well, that reminds me to a thing that I think picks up something you were saying, which I think is really worrying. You're talking about like Clinton winning the popular vote, but not enough. What is really worrying is that, by all accounts, Trump's campaign was very poorly funded for a really long amount of time, right? He just didn't have a huge amount of ground organisers. And he was disowned or detached from a lot of people running in their own Senate races, Congress races, who thought he was going to drag them down and didn't kind of, you know, sell themselves as Republican candidates. They sold themselves on personal brands. And, you know, a lot of grandees cut off a certain amount of support for him. I mean, he obviously had some very big donors like Sheldon Adelson and people like that. But actually, had he been a competent version of Donald Trump, right, a more disciplined version of Donald Trump, but with all the same toxic opinions and policy positions, he might have done a lot, lot better.
So I actually disagree, right? So one of my, this is a new opinion, so I reserve the right to stress test it and decide that it's actually a bad one. One of the things I wrote before the result is one of the reasons why I was bearish or bullish on Trump, and now I'm merely sheepish on Trump, was that he did not have a good ground operation, right? However, you know, as Tony Blair, to say something nice about Third Wayers after being mean about them earlier, says in the forward to The Unfinished Revolution, like, this idea that a good campaign can rescue you from the problems of a bad candidate.
Oh, yeah, that's what we all thought May 2015 about Labour, right?
And I think this thing is, I think I'd kind of forgotten that, actually.
Yeah, but that is fascinating, because we have had this discussion as well about whether or not the Labour has got a flaw that pair of people who just vote Labour, right? And that's the thing I think is fascinating, is that Trump distanced him. How much was Trump seen by people as the Republican candidate, and how much was he seen as the Trump Party candidate?
I mean, I think the thing is, he kind of got to play it both ways. There were states where he underperformed the Republican candidate. There were states where he overperformed them. Mm. But the really crucial thing was that enough Republicans had kind of mainstreamed him, then he got enough of the Republican vote to win in the Electoral College.
But I think that's a big failure of the media as well. I think that I know that there will inevitably be
a shocker of this election.
Media navel gazing, but the failure to distinguish between him and actually mainstream Republicans has been really appalling. The false equivalence between Clinton's sort of minor bits of sort of slight, you know, subterfuge around her email server and these massive terrible opinions and, you know, outright boasts of you know, cheating people, not paying taxes makes him smart, all this kind of stuff, that's been a shocker, as has been treating him like a joke initially. And then you can't pivot to then saying, "Oh, he's not a joke. We all said it was very funny, but actually, he's Hitler." Like no one was going to believe that. Jimmy Fallon letting him go on his show and like lark about, I think, looks a catastrophic misjudgment.
Yeah, and actually, it was similar to that. Was another way than the prior about the US UK descriptions. That prior turned out to be full of holes.
In what way?
Well, I just. My instinct then there was a bigger gulf between. I just think the gulf I thought existed between the US and Europe is not as large as I thought it was yesterday. But yeah, just as with Brexit, the media cover this ridiculous, you know, false equivalent. This, oh, it's been an awful campaign, as if the awfulness had irradiated naturally from the sky and not, you know, emanated from one particular candidate. But on a cheery note, let's all laugh at the people who think that Bernie Sanders would have done better.
Right. It's our only lonely consolation as we head into the nuclear sunset, okay. Which is this sort of, well, do you know what I think it's down to? I think there's a problem. I think there's a kind of clash between people who see themselves as left-wing and people who see themselves as liberal, and people who feel themselves as left-wing. Some of them are of that slightly Bolshevik tendency where they think that, you know, kind of the soft left has to be defeated to usher in the proper revolution. That's how they sort of saw the Sanders-Clinton thing. There's also, I think, a big problem with the fact that almost everyone in Britain, with the exception of like Raheem Kassam and Nigel Farage, didn't support Trump, right? The mainstream of the Tory party backed Clinton, the mainstream of the Labour Party, the SNP, all would have been very happy with a Clinton presidency. Everyone basically wanted the same thing. And if you define yourself as somebody who is, you know, a lefty, that's a really important identity that you attach to yourself, then that's, you don't want to have the same opinion as, I don't know, Matthew Paris or, I don't know, let's name others.
Janine Ganesh.
Yeah, exactly, right? You want to, so you, what you need to do at that point is to kind of say, well, obviously I wouldn't want to, I personally would want to vote for a much more left-wing candidate.
I always forget how much Janine Ganesh sounds like goes to the NBA. Do, 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 do. Janine Ganesh.
Boo, boo, do, boo, do, boo. Do, do.
But anyway,
So that's my problem, is that I think, you know, obviously Clinton, what she, you know, where she stands on the political spectrum is not where I stand, but it's sort of one of those things where it's kind of like, well, in an ideal world, you know, I'd be a size 8 and eat bacon butties all day long, but you have to make the best out of the choices that you're given.
I also think that, so I have a couple of problems with it. One, I think, so people are massively overreading some polls taken during the primary which showed Sanders overperforming Clinton against Trump.
When he hadn't faced any attacks.
Yeah, I mean, I think the thing is that ultimately, because it never really looked close, no one really attacked Sanders in kind of great depth. It was not anywhere near as vicious as the 2008 primary. So one, it is a silly comparison from that perspective. The most important one is we know that Michael Bloomberg, you know, Capital would not have permitted such a left-wing Democrat to be the only alternative to Trump. Bloomberg would have got in the race, and so Bernie could not have done better than Hillary Clinton, right? That is kind of the thing that no one really... It's just like... So there's quite an important variable here, which is this other candidate who would have run.
And this idea that a guy who couldn't... I mean, I know Corbyn said this, supporters say this, and it's annoying, but the guy who lost quite comprehensively in the primaries to Hillary Clinton was magically going to become blossom into some sort of much more impressive candidate.
But the Corbyn supporters are 100% correct on that.
If you can't beat Corbyn in the selection, you probably can't beat whoever they're going to put up against you in the election.
Yeah, but also just like ultimately, a lot of people have talked about the Democratic nomination, and my instinct is because the people doing this are white and don't actually have any black friends, or more importantly, actually more accurately, black relatives who are older than them, because they ran sort of 50-50 among black millennials. Is then She won because she won by a popular vote landslide. She won the primaries, you know, the unbound delegates by a landslide, because she won a landslide largely powered by black and other minority voters, right? And like, ultimately, seeing as one of the problems was not sufficient turnout from black voters in this election, this idea and the solution to that was someone who couldn't get black voters in his own primary. I mean,
I think that's really the thing that people...
feels unlikely, doesn't it?
People kind of forget about Hillary Clinton. I mean, David Remnant's The Bridge, which is about Obama's first run. You know, the fact that actually there were some black community leaders who really ummed and ahed about, you know, the choice between the first black candidate, which is an incredibly, you know, important landmark, and the fact they felt a loyalty to Clinton, who, as they said, had been to all the events, right? She turned up to all the stuff. She'd done a lot. She and Bill Clinton had done a lot of work with African-American community leaders. The fact that was even a question when the alternative was Obama testifies to the fact that she put a lot of work into listening to that community.
Yeah, and I think, you know, people talk a lot, and actually mostly in an ahistorical way, about things like the welfare bill and super predator. I mean, that was an agenda that a large chunk of sort of black political leadership saw as the way to get...
That was about the time that Bill Cosby was sort of talking about how, you know, African Americans needed to pull their pants up and, like, the sort of respectability agenda, right? Like, the 90s were a bad and different time.
Yeah, I mean, I'd take them back now. but yeah, I think, yeah, it is just a sort of nonsense conceit because of the Bloomberg thing, because of the fact that he was... But the last one is like... If you think that a man who has successfully won an election on a ticket of white resentment wouldn't have been able to defeat a Jewish candidate
who'd been a senator for decades, yeah, as well. This is the other thing as well. You've been able to paint him as just as much an establishment, but with nasty overtones of, like, money grabbing. Well, I mean, the final Trump advert was like actually had phrases in it like international. What is it, international groups who control the levers of world finance? Yeah. You know, it was that kind of like...
And people shouldn't forget that, you know, the African-American community, as with the black community in Britain, does not have a great record on anti-Semitism all the time. That would have hurt him among that community. I imagine it did was part of why he had struggled in that community in the primaries, and that would have hit him in the general as well. I think, you know, the dispiriting thing about the left... I used to say in Europe, but I now have to say worldwide, it is a series of things where people go, what if we try this? And you're like, here's another country, they did that, it didn't work, right? That basically, there is not really a, you know, kind of people got very excited about Renzi, and now he is struggling. People were excited about Tsipras, and obviously he has been partly broken by his creditors, but also he is now trailing in the polls to the right. No, it's just a silly idea. It's just a silly idea. It didn't actually even cheer me up pointing out that it was a silly idea.
No, but the trouble is it's essentially unfalsifiable, isn't it? Because there is no way to prove it or disprove it, because you can't without hopping into an alternate reality, which I would take right now.
I know this is kind of a semi-special kind of extended howl into the void, but I did think there was actually a very good You Ask Us by someone who, as in keeping, I've forgotten their name.
Well, let's come back to that so we can put a break in, because God knows people will need one by now.
Hi, I'm Caroline.
And I'm Anna.
And together we host the New Statesman's pop culture podcast, Seriously. If this sounds like something you'd be interested in, you can get this episode and everything else we've done on newstatesman.com/SRSLY.
You ask us!
And, one of the things you've asked...
Contempt on your face then was extraordinary.
I mean, a lot of you have mainly asked us, why, God, why? I feel we dealt with that in the first section, but we had an interesting question, which is, has the proliferation and creation of political polling been bad for journalism and therefore the coverage of elections and politics in general?
Now, I touched on this last week with John, and my feelings have only got stronger since last week, which is that it's bad. It's a bad thing. It's a bad, 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 bad thing. And I'll tell you why, because I already think that the problem with the way that elections are covered is far too much about a narrative and a soap opera and a like, oh, she's up 3 points here. Oh, such and such. He's doing well with 29-year-old shepherds in Alabama. And what that does is it gives you a huge amount of volatility, a huge amount of noise. There's always something to report. You know, it fills the kind of, it expands like a gas to fill the available space. But it crowds out because it's sort of more interesting than talking about scrutinising policy positions. And I think that one of the things that's really noticeable from this election is, tell me what Donald Trump's tax plan is.
The Ryan tax plan, isn't it?
I think he's probably against tax, broadly.
Yeah,
But I'll be honest with you, I really couldn't tell you. I mean, I'm going to assume that it was bad. But that is based purely on the prejudice that I haven't yet heard a policy from him that is good. And I think that's really... And also, it's just, it actually means as well that he's weirdly been able to get away with lots of things that ought to, you know, his base constituencies really ought to object to if they were living by their values. I mean, Christian evangelicals, for example, turns out they actually really don't care that much about how many times someone's been married.
The evangelical community is an interesting place on divorce, although obviously there are practicing questions there. And they have voted in favour of the person who's going to bring in the flood. So I disagree, right? And then I think I completely agree that polling has done all these things. I just think polling is not why that's happened. If we banned all polling tomorrow, instead you'd get like things where people would like, you know, get on a train, vox pop, four people in a pub, go, it's neck and neck.
Actually think that there's been less of that, which is kind of more interesting. I mean, they all published a piece that I found very amusing, but also very horrifying, which was like, which was called I Talked to Some Trump Voters Too. And it was like, I've been to, you know, Toledo, whatever, or, and, you know, and these people are angry. And the trouble was that I didn't hear enough from ordinary people. Like, I was a member of a secret Facebook group called Pantsuit Nation, which was for people who were interested in Hillary Clinton, supported Hillary Clinton. I wanted to see actually whether or not there was genuine enthusiasm for Hillary Clinton. And there was, right? There were women who were really excited about voting for her. And I never heard from any of them. There was like one BuzzFeed story on, you know, 96-year-old women who were born before the 19th Amendment, before women could have the vote, who were really excited for the first time to cast their ballot. And Caroline and I realised yesterday, you know, I've never voted for a woman. I've never had the option to vote for a woman just because of where I live and where I've lived in London.
Blimey. Yeah, wow. God, it does make me feel spoiled. Oh, I might not be able to vote for a woman next time. Oh, Diane. I hope she stays as my MP.
In boundary changes, I guess you might be screwed. But I take your point. I think it's the same thing as, you know, is Facebook a problem? Is the internet killing our attention spans? The problem is what we've got is sugar, and polling is sugar. And there's also a nutritious buffet. But just as in real life, too many of us are going, sugar, maybe I could just have some sugar. When actually, you know, for evolutionary reasons. The trouble is that
there's that experiment evolution where they give the kids everything they eat. If you take away sugar, then people actually just have a balanced diet. And
yeah, but evolution has led us to seek out, you know, to seek out sugar, and it's led us to seek out because it signals to the, you know, there's a high calorie food, which is really useful when you've been chased around by mammoths. But the same thing with information. You know, our brains are constantly hungry. It's how we've survived. It's how we've become, you know, tool makers. It's how we've put a man on the moon. But that same thing, unfortunately, makes us very liable to just constantly seek new information. And that's what polling is. It's sugar.
So there's really interesting, actually, divide here, right? In that I'm basically going for the man is innately born damned. And
right.
Can only be saved through faith, right? In many ways, a more Catholic approach, right?
Yeah.
And yet you are going for the Protestant, like, no, we just need to work harder and it would all be fine.
Yeah, which is a reversal of our respective backgrounds. But the thing is, I don't think polling will necessarily be such a problem because it's now got to such a pitch that if you don't believe it, it becomes pointless, right? That's the problem with it. Is it only, there's only point checking the polls every day if you think they're telling you anything useful. And I think it will take, you know, Huffington Post had Hillary Clinton victory at 98%, 99%. You know, it's going to be quite hard for people to kind of come back from
you,
that.
You say that, but we did that. We said that after the general election, and then everyone was like, oh, the poll this, the Yeah.
Yeah, but like even pigeons learn eventually after pecking a kind of electrocuting wire a couple of times. We will surely eventually realise that poles are not helping us understand things quite as much as we think they are.
Tune in next week to find out whether or not we are, as an industry, smarter or dumber than pigeons.
Tired of ads barging into your favourite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
You've been listening to the New Statesman podcast, presented by Helen Lewis and me, Stephen Bush, and produced by India Bork. You can find us every week at newstatesman.com/podcast or on iTunes. Our theme music is Devil with the Devil by the Underscore Orchestra, licensed under Creative Commons.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.